Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Department of Amore here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah. I hope you remember Valentine's Day. Did you remember February 14th?
Of course I remember. What do you think I am? You? By the way, don't forget your anniversary. It's only 8 months away.
So, listen, Don Juan, tell me. What'd you get your lovely wife for Valentine's Day? You didn't get her another dustbuster like you did last year.
No. I learned my lesson last year. This year, I went all out.
All out, yeah? What'd you get her?
Shop vac.
She likes that, huh? Shop vac. She's supposed to get the message that you love her because you bought her a shop vac?
It's 5.5 horsepower, man. Oh, you should hear this thing.
Yeah?
The whole neighborhood knows when she's vacuuming.
Well, that way, actually, a shop vac is good because it does liquids.
Everything.
You spill a glass of milk?
Suck it right up.
Suck it right up.
That's right. I lost 3 pairs of gloves already.
Excellent. All right, I'm going to give you a quick quiz. This is, instead of reading a letter, I'll read the letter too. Bowling Green State University, Dr. Jack Minat, a professor of psychology.
Yes.
By the way. Your recent contention that there is a relationship between being a guy and driving in snow is an interesting hypothesis. However, not being psychologists, you may be unaware of the fact that single-item tests are notoriously unreliable. Thus, it is not necessarily the case that someone is a real guy just because he gets into his extended cab, turbocharged Dodge Dakota 4x4 and drives aimlessly around during a blizzard.
Mm-hmm. Looking for light bulbs.
Although I will admit...
Those are hard to find 35 waters.
I will admit that rapid growth of knuckle hair and a sudden craving for bananas do lend some credence to the claim. Nevertheless, if you truly wish to determine whether someone is a real guy, a more psychometrically adequate test is required. Fortunately, just such an instrument has been constructed. This is from Dave Barry. I mean, if you haven't read this, and I was just commenting to Dougie, I think I read Dave Barry every week. Somehow, I never read the ones that people send me.
The good ones, you mean?
The good ones. This is a long test, but I'll just pick out the couple of questions.
The doozies.
Okay. You've decided you truly love a woman and you want to spend the rest of your life with her, sharing the joys and the sorrows, the triumphs and the tragedies, and all the adventures and opportunities that the world has to offer, come what may.
Shop vac. The answer.
Wait a minute. How do you tell her? A, you take her to a nice restaurant and you tell her after dinner. B, you take her for a walk on a moonlit beach and you say her name, and when she turns to you with the sea breeze blowing her hair and the stars in her eyes, you tell her. C, tell her what? Okay. You've been seeing a woman for several years. She's attractive and intelligent, and you always enjoy being with her. One leisurely Sunday afternoon, the two of you are taking it
easy. Does my wife know about her?
Yeah. You're watching a football game. She's reading the paper. When she suddenly, out of the clear blue sky, tells you she thinks she really loves you, but she can no longer bear the uncertainty of not knowing where your relationship is going. She says she's not asking whether you want to get married, only whether you believe that you have some kind of future together. What do you say? A, that you sincerely believe the two of you do have a future, but you don't want to rush it. B, that although you also have strong feelings for her, you cannot honestly say that you'll be ready anytime soon to make a lasting commitment, and you don't want to hurt her by holding out false hope. C, that you can't believe the Jets called a draw play on 3rd and 17. And here's my favorite. Alien beings from a highly advanced society visit the Earth. Don't forget, this is the guy test. Alien beings from a highly advanced society visit the Earth, and you are the first human they encounter. As a token of intergalactic friendship, they present you with a small but incredibly sophisticated device that is capable of curing all disease, providing an infinite supply of clean energy, wiping out hunger and poverty, and permanently eliminating oppression and violence all over the entire Earth. You decide to, A, present it to the President of the United States.
Sounds like a shop vac to me. Go ahead.
B, present it to the Secretary General of the United Nations. Mm. C, take it apart. Now that's the test, man. What the hell could be in here?
Of course. You would have to take it apart.
You'd have to take it apart. Yeah. You'd owe it to society.
That's my motto.
World.
Take everything apart. If you want to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Judy in L.A.
Judy! My wife's name is Judy. Where did you say, where you were from?
L.A., Los Angeles.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind?
I have a 1987 Toyota van, stick shift, and a little while, let's say a month ago, I was driving down the highway, and it made a noise, and I'll sort of imitate it.
Yeah.
As I pressed down on the clutch pedal, like this.
Hey, that's very good, Judy. Wait, you're driving along. I didn't get the scenario here.
You're on the highway.
I'm driving on the highway.
Yeah.
And I pressed down on the clutch.
Why did you press down on the clutch if you're driving on the highway?
Oh, I'm sorry. When I started the car to drive down the highway, I pressed down on the clutch pedal. And every time I had a shift. By highway, it's not a super highway. It's the coastway, and there are stops and things like that.
Yeah. So you're on the highway. You were stopped, however.
I had started my car, and this noise happened. I drove 15 miles to the mechanic. Every time I had a shift in city traffic to get to the mechanic, the noise continued. It wasn't whirring by that time. It was more the okay. And then when I turned off the engine and told him what the problem was and started the car, it was gone.
Really?
Totally gone.
And it's still gone.
Nope. That's not it.
There's more.
So what happened is my clutch was worn anyhow, so he replaced my clutch. I got a new clutch.
Good.
Great. And then, about 2 days ago, the same thing. The noise happened again as I started my car. So I pulled into a gas station, turned off the motor, called the mechanic. The phone was dead. He wasn't there. I went back. It was gone. And now he's saying maybe it's my transmission. And when he had replaced the clutch, there was 2.5 quarts. It was 2.5 quarts low in the transmission. There was a leak, which he also fixed.
But the only time you ever heard the noise was when you stepped on the clutch pedal?
Each time I stepped on the clutch pedal. This was from a starting point, you know, getting into the car and starting it. And then this would happen.
So you didn't have to be in motion. In other words, you weren't beginning to move. You could just be sitting there stopped. You'd step on the clutch and you get this. Make the noise again.
They go together.
And that happened even when you were shifting, like, from second to third?
Yes, only when I stepped on the clutch pedal.
It's impossible.
No, it isn't.
It's impossible. There is no such sound as that possible from stepping on a clutch pedal. I am intimately familiar with every piece in a clutch. It's impossible for a clutch to make that sound.
For the clutch to make that sound. The clutch is not making the sound.
Absolutely not.
But I was stepping on the pedal.
And the transmission is not making the sound either.
Yeah, it is.
I doubt it.
It's located where it seems to... Okay, the engine is under my seats, right?
Yeah.
So it seems to be coming from my right under the passenger seat. Or maybe in the wheel, I don't know, but some in that direction, to my right.
Under the passenger seat? Oh, how's that for a little twist? Now what's your answer?
Well...
I'm sitting on my engine all the...
Yeah, and this is a rear-wheel drive vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The clutch is right underneath you.
Uh-huh.
The transmission is right behind you. The engine is right in the middle.
Yeah.
I think I can safely say, and I speak for my brother when I say this, we have no idea.
No.
You're guessing. You're taking wild guesses. You have no idea what this noise is. You can't possibly pick an answer that makes sense to anybody. Go ahead. I defy you.
Well, seeing you put it that way. Makes sense. You have to put it in that condition, huh?
I did have to put that.
Well,
I mean, this is hopeless.
No. Well, I'm going to have to go to the fallback position.
Yeah.
The fallback position is that it's the transmission. And as unlikely as it may seem, because what's happening is there's a bearing in that transmission that's getting chewed up, and when you step on the clutch pedal, you are changing the load on the transmission, and you're causing the whirring and the crunching noise to occur because of the fact that you are immediately interrupting the flow of power from the engine.
I was ready to accept this.
Yes, and now you're going to have to accept it because
it's
right.
I mean, I was ready to accept this very answer until she said that it was coming from under the passenger seat.
She doesn't know. Judy, you don't know.
No, I don't really know.
Not.
You know.
Yeah, no, noises can be deceptive. Yeah.
I will say that if you're willing to renege on the under the passenger seat piece of information, that I would go along with the transmission idea.
So they need to take it apart.
Well, no, I think in the interest of science, you ought to drive it until it breaks.
Well, you have to, because you don't know what it is. Unless the mechanic can actually see it happen, hear it happen, it would be crazy to invest $800.
Why does it stop when I turn it off?
Why does it stop what? When you turn the engine off?
I turn the engine off, the noise is gone. It was gone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the next time you start it, it's gone.
Yeah, the next time.
As pieces of that bearing, and there is a bearing, I bet you, that's going.
Uh-huh.
As pieces of that get chewed up, the noise will come and go. When the piece gets chewed up, the noise will go away, and then another piece gets chewed up, and the noise will come back.
Yeah, so you really do have to drive it until it gets so bad that you can be guaranteed that when you bring it to the shop, they'll hear it.
You want it to sound like a cement mixer when you go in.
So, is it safe to drive it up to that point?
Sure. Yes.
Okay, so they couldn't find it by just taking it apart now and looking for it.
Well, they might, but if that isn't it, boy, you're going to be mad at them and us.
And us, right. Especially us. So we're really protecting ourselves by telling you not to do it now because we didn't hear the noise.
Right, and our legal staff advises us to be extremely cautious when giving answers.
Or at least vague.
At least vague, right.
Thanks, Judy.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What a way to start the show with a killer like that one.
Boy, that was tough. I hope this doesn't forebode.
Tired already. I feel like I've been here for 2 days.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Brother Roger calling from Christ in the Desert Monastery in Abiquiu, New Mexico.
Wait, start again. Brother who?
Roger.
Brother Roger from Christ in the Desert.
Desert Monastery in Abiquiu, New Mexico.
Christ in the Desert Monastery.
Yeah. I got it. Well, it's
that's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice. And we're way up here in the wilderness of northern New Mexico.
So how long have you been a brother?
Well, I'm actually a lay brother, and I've been here for 7 years. And I'm responsible for taking care of the community's cars. We have like 7 four-wheel drive vehicles.
Ah.
Four-wheel drive for the desert?
Well, we have a 13-mile clay surface road that gets wet, and we really have to fight our way through grease to get to the main road.
Oh, that gets pretty slick, I imagine.
Very slick. It's like black ice.
Yeah.
And that's what leads me into this question, because we have four-wheel drive vehicles. Some are SUVs, some are pickup trucks.
Well, let me get this straight. Now, this is a question that prayers have not helped to answer, I presume.
Not so far, no.
Okay.
Not so far.
But does that mean we couldn't recommend further praying?
You
if
could,
if we don't
yes.
know any other answers?
You could.
That
yes.
would be
that'd
okay
be,
with you.
Yeah, we frequently...
Your last-ditch effort. Yeah.
We frequently pray ourselves when we give an answer.
Okay.
Okay, well, this is really a generic question about the four-wheel drive vehicles, but what triggered it was when I took our Dodge Ram four-wheel drive truck into the Dodge dealer, mm-hmm. and the service advisor, and I use that word very loosely, said that on a four-wheel drive vehicle, in order to avoid damage to the four-wheel drive system, you should have 4 exactly matching tires. Now, not only in terms of size, but also tread pattern.
And shape.
and shape, exactly. Don't mix a Firestone with a Michelin or a Goodyear with a Dunlop, because you'll wreck the four-wheel drive system.
That sounds like hogwash to me, bro.
Yeah, I mean, that's having the same diameter tire
mm-hmm.
is essential to almost any vehicle that has a differential.
Right.
And because you have a differential in the front and the back on these things,
mm-hmm.
it's important that you don't have an oddball sized tire on either front or rear.
Right.
If you never use the four-wheel drive, it wouldn't matter what you had in the front. The front wheels wouldn't care.
But the back would.
Because uh-huh. the front wheels would turn independently of one another.
Right.
But because the back tires, or back wheels rather, are linked by the gears and the differential, if you have two different sized tires, you will be spinning what's called the spider gears.
And they will be spinning all the time, and they're not designed to spin all the time.
Right.
They're only designed to spin when you take turns. Because when you take turns, the two rear wheels obviously of necessity turn at different speeds.
Right.
And so do the front ones, but the front ones aren't connected to one another unless you have four-wheel drive.
Unless we throw the transfer case in.
Right,
correct.
Right. So his heart may be in the right place.
But his mouth wasn't.
Now, the only variation I heard on this was when I talked to our tire man, and he said, no, that's not true, unless the vehicle is an all-wheel drive vehicle, like a Subaru, for example, where the four-wheel drive is engaged all the time.
Well, in fact, in a vehicle like a Subaru, it's more important.
Yes. So the tire guy was correct.
Uh-huh.
The dealer was full of baloney.
Was that something new?
So let's let's.
He was the service advisor.
Service advisor. Well, he was giving bad advice.
Well, he was not advising you on service. He was advising you on tires.
Yes.
Yeah. Well.
Your advice would be match them as closely as you can, but don't worry if they're not exact.
Right. And
but the size you want to match perfectly.
Oh yeah. That I understood. You know, yeah. That I always do. But we sometimes get them from different sources, or sometimes you go to the same source and you discover 2 years later they've changed the pattern. You know.
Yeah.
And Brother Roger.
Yes.
Pray for us. We need it.
Long and hard.
See you later.
You, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, look, I want to discuss last week's puzzler, which was a great puzzler, if I do say so myself. And I'm sure you remember. You don't remember it, do you?
Well, give me a hint.
Okay, I'll lead you there with word association.
Oh, that game.
And we'll make it easy.
Okay, go ahead.
Just give me the first word that pops into your mind.
Jerk.
No, we're not playing yet.
I know. Jerk.
All right, wise guy, here we go. Who's gal?
Uncle Nunzio.
All right, how about up the river?
Salmon. They swim up the river.
Clink.
Champagne glasses.
You're hopeless. You're absolutely hopeless. I give up. The puzzler was from my Prisoner and Light Switches series, and we'll be back with details in just a minute.
Cars move all around me, stepping up the pace, and I cruise down the slow lane, lost in my own space. And I can drive 4 miles and never see what's all around.
And even though George Washington tosses his radio into the Potomac whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and not the answer to last week's puzzler.
What, you're not going to give the answer to the puzzler?
Not yet, Piston Puss. But I gave out a very interesting puzzle last week, one that appeared to be highly mathematical.
Yeah, you said it was going around all the mathematical cocktail parties in Quito, Ecuador, somewhere like that, right?
Well, a small number of people sent us correct answers. And we'll give out a prize to one of the early responders.
Yeah.
But before I give the answer on the air, I want to restate the puzzler in a way that may help a lot more of our listeners figure it out.
Ah, so you're going to de-unclarify it.
There you go.
That's it. Yeah.
So stay tuned for that. I'll restate the whole thing in the third half of the show. And next week we'll have two winners, one from the first week and one from the second week.
I can hardly wait. Yes, this is your sneaky way of not coming up with a new puzzler, isn't it?
I have a plethora of potential puzzlers.
Right.
None as good as this one, however. Well, no, I did feel like, I'll explain it later. I did our listeners an injustice, and I want to right the wrong.
Oh, okay. Good.
Okay. Anyway, if you want to talk to us, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-22-78-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Kate. I'm calling from Islesford, Maine.
Hi, Kate.
Islesford.
Islesford.
I-L or I-S-L?
I-S-L. Silent S.
Islesford.
Yep.
Yeah. Is that way up there in the Never Never Land?
North of the Arctic Circle. No, we're not that far north. We're about, I guess, middle of the coast. I'm on an island, a little Cranberry Island. Islesford's the name of the town on the island.
So you live on an island?
Yes.
In the winter?
In the winter.
On the coast of Maine?
Yep.
What are you, nuts?
Well, she's probably, I mean, there are certain people who like that sort of stuff.
What's the charm? I mean, why? I mean,
she can't get off the island.
Boat's frozen.
Well, this is a particularly beautiful area of Maine, if I say so.
Oh, I'm sure it is when the flowers are in bloom and the bees are buzzing, but neither of those things is happening now.
No, but the coast of Maine, you have to admit, they say it's rugged, and it is quite beautiful. But in my opinion, it's beautiful for about 15 minutes. And then what?
And then the mosquitoes get you or the cold does.
Oh, the cold does. Yeah.
Now, my brother suffers. We had an uncle. whose name was Uncle Dodo. But that has nothing to do with anything. But my brother suffers from Uncle Dodo disease.
Which is what?
You cannot take him any place to see anything and have him stay for more than 10 minutes without him saying, let's get out of here.
No, I always preface it with, gee, that's nice. Okay, let's get out of here.
Right. No matter what it is, you take him to see the Taj Mahal. Wow, that's great. Okay, let's go have
coffee. No. See, that's not true. It only applies to natural wonders. If you take me to a coffee shop, I'm good for hours.
We've noticed.
But if you take me to, like, the Grand Canyon, I would say, gee, that's great. Okay, let's get out of here.
Right, anyway, Kate, what's on your mind today?
Enough about geography.
That's all right. Well, this is an interesting situation because I don't really want to know how to make a car go.
Uh-huh.
I want to know how to make a car stop.
Yeah, a lot of people have this question.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Here's the situation. This is an island, as I told you, and it's rather small. We've only got about, I'd say 3 miles.
Yeah, so if you skid, you're in a lot of trouble. You go off the runway, to speak.
Right, exactly. Well, there are a few cars out here, but they're pretty much old junkers, and nobody really goes very fast. They just use their trucks to haul groceries and traps, and that's about it. But there's one fellow who's got a Malibu, and he spends, I guess, I would say 80% of his waking hours driving the roads back and forth. And this isn't just an ordinary Malibu. He's got an exhaust system that is particularly loud. And when you're living in a small community of only, I guess, about 78, 80 people, something like that, and this guy's going back and forth all day long.
Driving you nuts.
Driving us nuts. And, you know, we get concerned about the kids running in the road, and who knows, he's making 60 down the highway.
So you're concerned about how do we stop his car from running.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So you want us to suggest some...
Now, here's the catch, though. This is the clincher, because we like Corey. That's his name. I mean, he's a really good guy, and I have all
And, of course, he since this is only a very small community, he knows you, and you know him.
You got it.
So he will know that you called.
And if I sabotage his car...
He'll know you did it.
Was
you.
Well, maybe not. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, he'll know. We'll write to him.
Maybe we can give you the instructions in code.
You could mail them to me in a secret envelope. Well, I'll tell you. I don't want him to go to any great expense, but I'm just trying to think, you know, what's something clever we could do? Just keep him busy for a couple of months, or at least to keep him, you know, at a minimum of 15 miles an hour. You think there's anything that can be done?
Oh, so you'd be happy with just slowing him down.
Yeah, just slowing him down or, just, you know, making it so that he has to work for a while before he can hit the road again.
Well, have you considered the direct approach? I mean, not that I haven't got a ready answer for your.
You mean just
walk up and say, Corey, consarn it?
Yeah, perhaps.
Well, I think most members of his family have attempted that, as well as some other concerned citizens, and you know, it's sort of free rein out here. You can't really. I mean,
sure.
The guy hasn't got a whole lot to do but spin his wheels.
And he's got island fever.
He's got island cabin fever.
Here's what you do. I mean, there are a lot of different things you can do.
Yeah.
But you need...
Most aren't legal, though.
No, most of them aren't legal.
I don't want you to...
No, you know what this... He needs either a visit from the U.S. Army recruiter. Doesn't he? I mean, this guy needs to go places, see people, do things. That's what he needs. He needs some adventure in his life.
Yeah, he's got nothing to do, and he's got the cars. His only entertainment.
Yeah, true.
And he's trying to drive everyone else crazy, and he's succeeding.
Maybe we could open a Domino's Pizza on the island, and he could be the delivery guy. So you like to slow him down, and the direct approach doesn't work. So I guess we have to use the indirect approach.
Like a potato in the tailpipe or some such thing like that.
He's clever. I mean, he definitely knows cars.
Well, let's see if he can figure this out.
Right.
You have to have someone sneak up to his car at night or when he's away, take all his spark plugs out, and open the spark plug gaps up to about a quarter of an inch.
Okay.
Or more. Half an inch.
Yeah.
And put them back in. He won't be able to go over 20. And he won't figure it out either, because he'll never think that his spark plug batch could have gotten bigger.
No, but at some point he'll decide to tune it up and put new plugs in it. But and then he'll solve that.
Yeah, but then you put the potato in his tailpipe. Try the spark plugs. Open those gaps way up.
All right.
Yeah, he won't be able to get above 20 miles an hour, and he'll spend the night. By the time he gets it all figured out, you'll have moved. Good luck, Kate, and hope the spring comes soon.
All right, we listen to you guys every week.
Sure, what the hell else you got to do? We need more people like you, Kate. Lonely, miserable people.
Captive audience.
Captive on a little island.
Trapped on an island.
With somebody driving back and forth outside your house, making noise.
If you listen carefully, you may hear him in the background.
Hey, good luck, Kate. If I'm ever up in Islesford, which is very unlikely, I'll give you a call.
All right.
Thanks a lot. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Eric in Charlotte, North Carolina.
With a K or a C?
With a C.
Of course.
What's going on, Eric?
Hey, I've got a 2004 Chevy Venture, and I'm having a strange problem with the windshield wipers.
Oh.
It was raining one day, driving somewhere. I stopped, turned the car off, and something weird happened. I honestly don't remember what it was because it's been a couple months now, but I turned off the wipers, I think, at the same time they jumped and then flipped into the up position. Normally, the wipers are down in the middle, and they kind of hide behind the edge of the hood.
Yeah, that's called the park position.
Normally they park. Well, now when they park in the up position.
But if you just start up the engine again and leave the windshield wipers on, they will work correctly?
No.
Yeah, they work. They work fine.
They work fine. They just stop in the wrong place.
So what did you do again? You shut the car and the wipers off simultaneously.
I think so. I don't remember because I wasn't thinking about it at the time. I just remember thinking, that's strange. But they flipped into the up position. Watch my hands. You can see me waving.
Well, don't forget that the wipers would stop wherever they were once you turn the engine off.
This is a very interesting machine. When you turn off the vehicle, your electrical system stays live until you open the driver's door. For example, you stop and your windows are still down. You can run them back up, even if you've taken the key out, as long as you haven't opened the door yet.
Is that true with the wipers?
Yes. Now, I'm figuring this is probably a simple reset somewhere. The little computer's gotten confused.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. If I had to guess, I'd say the problem is in the wiper motor itself.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But see, they work beautifully now, other than they stick up and they look a little funny.
Does this bother you?
Aesthetically, yes, but not really.
Well, because to fix it is going to cost you a motor.
Yeah, so you
could... A wiper motor.
You could go and buy a motor and install it. It's fairly easy to do, and see if, in fact, they park, and I think they will. On the other hand, you know, the thing not parking in the down position has its advantages in the winter.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that one blade is looking you right in the one on the driver's side isn't so much of a problem, but the other one is a pain.
Well, actually, no, these things come, the motors are mounted way on the outboard side of the vehicle, so they flip to the outside and then back down. So they're up along, basically along the posts. At the side of the windshield. So they're not really in my way. I mean, I can see just fine.
Oh, so these don't both move in the same direction at the same...
No, like, they both flip from the middle outward.
Yeah.
Oh, so now they're both at the extremes.
Yes.
They're as far away from each other as they possibly can be.
Oh, yeah, I can peel them off and scrape and so on, and that's fine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, how is it at high speed? Do they kind of flap around a little bit?
No, they're firm against the windshield. They don't bounce around that I've noticed.
Well, geez,
I also don't drive like your brother, so that, you know, I'm not doing 110 down the freeway.
Jeez, I'm tempted to suggest to you that you leave it. Eric, you could have discovered something here.
I might have. I mean, I've lived with it for months, and they're fine. It's aesthetically a little weird. I'd like to fix it.
You know, I mean, I think if you want to fix it, you're going to have to put a motor in it.
Okay.
I think if you don't want to fix it, go with the flow.
Here's what you do. Come spring, you buy a new motor, you put it in, but you don't throw away the one you take out.
We have a winter motor.
This is your winter motor.
Gotcha.
The other one is your summer motor.
Kind of like the old snow tires.
Exactly.
It's thinking like this that it's kept my brother out of some institutions of higher learning. Out of most of them, in fact. Yeah. So you could have a winter motor and a summer motor. Yeah.
I kind of like the way they're operating now.
I do, too.
Yeah.
In fact, if you adjusted them correctly, you could get them to park right against the trim.
Yeah, I probably could.
Eric, this could be $1 million idea.
Hey, do you guys have a patent lawyer handy?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
J.G. Rupol. He'll call you in the morning.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
See you later, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi. This is Turi from MIT.
Terry. Terry. Hi, Terry.
It's Turi.
Oh, Turi. What, how do you spell that?
T-U-R-I.
T-U-R-I.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a nickname or is that your real name?
It's my real name. It's an old Norse god.
I was going to say, it has to be a Norwegian or Finnish name.
Very good.
Yeah.
Tori, huh?
Yeah, you have a Tori, Lori. Never mind.
Yeah, that's Irish.
Well, they're close. They're related.
MIT.
Yes.
Yeah? And what do you
Which
do?
Which MIT is that?
That's the one you guys went to.
The one up the street.
The one up the street.
Now, I want to say...
You're not from the library, are you?
I returned all the library books.
I'm calling from Information Systems.
Okay.
Information Systems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what's up? You want some information?
I have a car. I have a 1990 Acura Integra, and it's been really reliable. But about a month ago, when I turned on the car, I heard this high-pitched whirring noise, like metal on metal.
Oh, okay.
Then the car started to shake really violently, so I turned it off and was, of course, dismayed to see white smoke rising from under the hood. And I hadn't driven the car, and it's still sitting in the MIT garage waiting for me to decide what to do about it.
Which garage is it? We can come right over there.
White smoke from under the hood.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, were you curious enough to even look? I mean, did you open the hood and look?
I did open the hood, and I saw white smoke, but I didn't really know how to diagnose what was going on.
Yeah, boy, you're not going to like this, I don't think.
She isn't going to like it, no.
What do you think?
No, you can hang up right now.
Oh. You know, do you still have the keys?
Of course I still have the keys.
Throw them away.
Right. Throw them down the nearest sewer. Oh.
So, yeah, the question is, should I be towing it to a mechanic to fix it, or is he going to tell me it's way too expensive to fix and I should tow it to a place to get rid of it?
Well, here's what I think happened, and you may also be a candidate on Stump the Chumps and prove me wrong if you're lucky.
This is a classic case. Style. With
this is a classic case of either a seized water pump.
Okay.
On this car, the timing belt runs the water pump.
Mm-hmm.
Either the water pump seized or one of the tensioners seized or some such thing happened, hence the squeal.
Yep.
But when that happened, the timing belt jumped. The smoke was the result of the belt burning up because it was not being allowed to rotate on that spinning thing, but rather slide against it because it was seized. And the rough running was because it jumped time.
Which throws the pistons off?
Well, which is worse than that. On this car, the pistons and the valves collide.
Oh.
So you bent
You heard when worlds engine. Collide, well, when pistons and valves collide,
so
it's even worse.
I think you bent a valve or two or three or four or five or six or seven. But this engine has only 16 valves.
Yeah.
Right?
And they're only $16 a piece.
Oh, more money. I think they're about $30 a piece.
Uh-huh.
But don't forget. They wouldn't all have gotten bent.
No, you might have only bent like 15 of them.
Like half of them. Maybe, yeah. Let's say half.
Yeah. So you could...
That's $128.
We just did one of these not long ago for a customer who bent all 16 valves.
So would you soak her? I mean, what does it cost to have her car fixed? That's $256 for valves.
Well, let's put it this way. I had to open up a separate Swiss bank account to deposit her check. It was a few thousand bucks.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's worth having someone look at it. I mean, don't turn the key again.
No, I'm not going to.
If you're
going to
do anything, have someone tow it.
Right.
And they can check to see
what
how bad
on.
It is.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck, Tori.
Thank you.
Oh, boy. Bummer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bummer.
Hey, I think it's time for us to take a little break. I think my brother needs a little rest. He hasn't been himself today.
What do you mean? I've been helpful, concise. I've even given out a couple of right answers.
Like I said, you're not yourself today.
We'll be back with more of your calls and an old and unimproved, old but improved Puzzler in just a minute.
Rubber wheels rolling round and round. And a DJ on the radio. Playing the country sound. Sun keeps shining on me. Out on the highway, it's so easy.
easy to be free. Kind of living that makes me feel alive. Probably have more in the bank if I was working 9 to 5. Work can be fun as I haul my load. Money ain't everything to the folks out on the road.
And even though Bob Costas wishes his ears were swollen shut whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. But it isn't a new Puzzler.
No.
It's last week's Puzzler. But
well, it's new because you're going to give it a different introduction.
A different slant, so to
slant.
Speak. Anyway, this is from my Prisoners and Light Switches series. And I got it from our pal Stan Zadonik, who teaches at Brown University. And he told me this Puzzler had been making the rounds of Hungarian mathematicians' parties, which evidently Stanley frequents.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
Anyway, I'm going to give you the Puzzler. But before that, I'm going to say that I feel that I did most of our listeners an injustice, because the first line of the Puzzler stated that this was making the rounds of these mathematicians' parties in Hungary,
yeah.
which suggested that you needed to be a mathematician to solve it.
Or Hungarian.
Or Hungarian.
Which immediately reduced the potential answerers to 7.
But we did get an answer from David Rainman Green.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, Dave Green, our assistant producer, figured it out. No
that,
one else.
That should be a hint enough right there. Any moron can figure this out.
And the truth is, you don't have to be Hungarian. You don't have to be a mathematician. In fact, I would go so far as saying that this is within the grasp of the average junior high schooler.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Here it is.
The warden meets with his 23 prisoners when they arrive. He gives them a challenge. He says, "You may meet together today and plan a strategy, but after today, you will be in isolated cells and have no communication with each other whatsoever." That's what he thinks. "There's a room in the prison that contains 2 light switches labeled A and B. These are just regular light switches. Up is on, down is off. I'm not telling you their present positions, which could be any combination of up or down.
Up or down.
And the switches are not connected to anything. After today, from time to time, whenever I feel so inclined, I will select one prisoner at random and escort him to the switch room. This prisoner will select one of the 2 switches and reverse its position. He must move one, but only one of the switches. He can't move both, but he can't move none either. He must move one. And then he'll be led back to his cell. No one else will enter the switch room until I lead the next prisoner there. And he'll be instructed to do the same thing, move one of the switches, either on or off. I'm going to choose prisoners at random. I may choose the same guy 3 times in a row, or I may jump around and come back. You know, that's what random means.
Yeah.
But given enough time, everyone will eventually visit the switch room as many times as everyone else. And here's what I want. Here's what I want you to be able to do, and here's why you need to devise a strategy. When one of you can say, we have each visited the switch room at least once, if you can say that and you are correct, you will all be set free.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not true, meaning someone hasn't been to the switch room, you will all be fed to the alligators. So the question is, what is the strategy the prisoners devise today?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, this is the same puzzle you gave last week without the intro that the Hungarian mathematicians
like I said, I think a 6th grader, a smart 6th grader, could figure it out, which puts you just out of the reach of Berman. But
and most everybody here. Yeah, it's good.
I think so. And I'm toying with giving another hint.
Well, I can give one. Take a long-term perspective. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, these guys are in prison for life. So if it took 20 years to come up with an answer, it would be a deal.
Well, you know, we also don't know how often the warden is calling. It may be every 5 minutes.
Maybe.
We don't know that, in which case they might all be out in a month.
But take a long-term perspective.
All right. The hint I was going to give is...
Go ahead. We'll give 2 hints.
Solve it for 3 prisoners.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah. Well, let's give another hint.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's
the answer.
No, here's the other hint is, when we were first introduced to this problem, unfortunately, there was a room full of MIT graduates, and we all focused on the fact that 23 was a prime number.
Yeah.
And boy, was that stupid.
Well, anyway.
That was a stupid.
I'm sure by now you've all gotten the answer. So you can write it on a postcard or on the back of a $21 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. But right now, if you have a question about your car or anything else, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jennifer. I'm calling from Victor, Idaho.
Hi, Jennifer. Victor?
It's a very small town about 10 miles from the Wyoming border.
Ah, okay.
Okay, I have a 2001 Subaru Outback. That stinks.
Oh, I don't think they're that bad.
I took it to the shop about a week ago because I had a gas leak. It smelled slightly like gas. And they told me that my fuel filter was really clogged, and so the hose that connected
to the filter?
Yeah, to the filter was leaking. Like, the screws had come a little loose because there was a bunch of goo in it. So they flushed all that stuff out, and then they reconnected the hose, and then the leak went away. But then it smelled even worse, like, when I took it home. Like, it was just awful.
And it smells of raw gas? I mean, like...
No, like old gas. Well, like a dirty mechanic.
I beg your pardon? Dirty old mechanic?
Well, because when I went into the shop to complain, they're like, well, we don't smell anything.
No, because you
like
smell like that, right? Right.
Standing next to me. And it's like, well, of course you can't smell anything. It's you.
Well, okay, so go ahead. So they fix this guck in the line.
Right.
And then the smell is worse.
It's worse. So they washed my car. One of the guys said, oh, we might have spilled some cleaner when we were in there. So they, like, hosed down the engine block or something. They vacuumed my car. They did all this stuff for me that was the smell they couldn't smell. It was great.
Yeah.
But then when I took it home, it still stunk.
Here's what I think they did.
Yeah.
They replaced your fuel filter.
Uh-huh.
When they took the old one off, the mechanic rested it on the cowl. You know, the cowl is that piece of grill work that's right in front of the windshield. Okay, and that's where outside air gets drawn into the passenger compartment.
Yeah.
Okay, and the guy rested the thing there, and glug, 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 it emptied out into your ventilation system.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just a guess. I didn't like, right from the beginning, I was suspicious of everything because I don't know what the smell may have been. There may have been something else going on, but I think whatever they did, they worsened it. You may have had a loose clamp. And they fixed that, but in the process, if they laid the old fuel filter on the cowl, they could have poured a pint of gasoline, and they said, oh, geez, now what are we going to do? And they tried everything.
And what I would do is leave the windows open.
For like 6 months or a year.
For a while.
It's like 9 degrees outside.
I understand. But do you want the stink?
Yeah, well, geez, you know, first, I think the first thing you have to do is get them to admit that they did this. Well, because otherwise you're going to be barking up the wrong tree. I could be wrong about this.
Okay.
Well, no, you're not wrong.
No, I don't think I'm wrong, but I could be. I could be wrong, but you could have a leak somewhere else, but it's pretty easy to find gasoline leaks.
Okay.
If it's bad enough so that you can smell it, they ought to be able to see it with the car running. And if they can't see it, they ought to be able to nail it down with their emissions tester. We have an emissions tester that checks for carbon monoxide and nitrous oxide and unburned hydrocarbons.
Uh-huh.
And so they can go around your entire fuel system, starting at the tank and working their way all the way up. I mean, you could have, for example, a bad gas cap, or you could have something wrong with the ventilation system, and that could give you a bad smell. So they need to sniff around to make sure, if they deny that they did this fuel filter thing, they need to verify, in fact, that there's not a leak someplace that is easily identifiable. If they don't conclude it's a fuel leak, the next thing to look at is the possibility that it's an oil leak, because an oil leak will smell often like gasoline.
Now, like a week later, it doesn't smell like gas so much as mechanics wearing old lady perfume.
No, that's the brain damage setting in.
Oh, okay.
This is how it progresses. That's why we don't smell it on ourselves.
Right.
Because we're brain dead.
Ah.
So every once in a while, I sniff Tommy, and I say, he says, how do I smell? I said, oh, not bad.
You smell like me. It's okay.
Good luck, Jennifer.
Great, thank you.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Oh, boy.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Dan calling from Ithaca.
Dan.
About 6 months ago, my wife and I bought a Toyota Corolla. We bought it used. It had been owned by another couple in a nearby town for about a year. And
why were they selling it?
They were selling it because they had to move to Chicago suddenly because of a job. They were actually leasing the car, and they bought
program.
Out the lease, and then we bought the car.
They were leasing. Okay.
And when they were selling us the car, one of the things they told us is that if we find an engagement ring in the car, that we have to let them know. And I asked about the story, and it turns out that at one point the husband and wife were driving along. The wife was in the passenger seat. They had a very heated argument. The wife took off her engagement ring, threw it at the dashboard, and it went down into the vent somewhere. Never seen again.
I love it. I love it.
And the question, well, part of buying the car, we ended up doing this whole transaction through Toyota, so we got to look at the whole service record. And it turns out that at least at one point, this couple took the car to Toyota and had them try to look for the ring, and Toyota never found it.
Of course they didn't. I'm sure whoever was looking at that car.
I'll bet he got married 6 months later.
Yeah, so you think the ring is still in there, huh?
Well, we promised the couple that if we ever found the ring, we would give it back to them. And my wife and I were just curious. I mean, is it possible that the ring's still there? And if it is, why didn't Toyota find it?
Well, the answer is it's almost impossible that the ring is still there. The part two is that
because
someone found it.
If it had fallen into the defrosted vent, then it should still be in there.
No, because they took it to the dealership to look for it.
No, I mean, it would still be in there had it not been taken out by the mechanic.
Right, so someone looked for it.
And found it.
And found it. And got married 6 months later. Right. To Millie, the cashier at the dealership.
I mean, it was crazy of them. I mean, they trusted an automobile mechanic at a dealership to find a valuable thing on his own.
I mean, my guys,
and
they steal people's lunches. People will say, oh, I left my lunch in the seat. Not anymore. Peter ate it. Bag and all.
Yeah. I mean, that was a big mistake. These were very, very naive, gullible people.
Well, what should somebody do then if something goes down the dashboard?
You have to stand there while the mechanic does it.
You got to
stand right next to him. You got to wedge yourself to that man.
Because our old Honda has little protective plastic pieces that would keep anything like that from happening. But this new Toyota seems...
Yeah. It's like asking an automobile mechanic to clean your sofa. There must be $100 in my sofa. You think I'd ever see it?
No, there isn't $100 in your sofa. I was at your house the other day. Alex and I split it.
There you go.
Yeah, we only got $12 a piece.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid that the ring is gone. However, it would be a nice Saturday afternoon project. I mean, spring will be coming to Ithaca in the next 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would be nice to, in fact, get under there yourself and start removing the ductwork for the heater. And you may be lucky and have it fall. Well, maybe you won't be lucky, but someone will be lucky if it falls out. Now, then you will be faced with the ethical dilemma of...
Should you tell your wife?
Right, or go to Harry's Pawn Shop and see how much you can get for it. Maybe you can get that Les Paul Jr. electric guitar you've always wanted. You never know.
Well, it seems like a useful thing to know, because you never know. We're going to have this car for a while. It's only got 15,000 miles on it, and you never know when a child or something is going to throw something valuable down there. So,
well, yeah. I don't think I would look for the ring yet. I would wait until you really needed the money.
Exactly.
It's like money in the bank.
Yeah. It's like money in the bank. Exactly.
Well, better yet, I would wait until you lose the address of the people who sold you the car.
Well, they've already moved to Chicago, and I don't have their new address.
Ah,
so.
Fine. You're all set. You can find it any time, then.
Right. Of course, we are on in Chicago, and I'm sure they're listening. So don't find the ring yet. But, no, it would be a nice project to look for. It would be fun.
Hmm.
No. Okay. Do you have the book, the service manual for the car?
I do, yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. I was going to suggest you do it without it. It'd be a lot more fun. No, take the vents apart, and it'll fall right out.
Okay.
If it's there, but it isn't there. We know it isn't there.
Yeah.
Don't we?
Just for the hell of it, I would check to see if any mechanics got married in the 4 or 5 months following that little episode.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. Or bought a boat.
Yeah. I really wonder how the argument got completed after she threw her ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. She explained it to me that I guess he was Irish and she was Italian, and that they have very fiery arguments. So I think this happens pretty regularly.
Yeah. Oh, I have that problem.
There may be 3 or 4 rings in there.
Yeah.
See you later, Dan.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. Gee, you threw your ring and it wound up.
Boom. Zoom.
What must have been the first 2 words out of her mouth? Well, it's happened again. You've blown off another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug, the subway fugitive, not a slave to fashion, bongo boy, frog man.
Pumpkin lips.
Pumpkin lips Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Fort Knox, Ham Hocks, Beef Stocks, Pop Rocks, and Nova Scotia Locks, Dueling Walks Lunchbox, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian Albin Heard before. Our public relations consultant is Lila Kadog. Our appointment secretary is Les Dulunch. And our solicitor of new ideas is Obi Quiet. Our staff auditor is Euripides Euripidos. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our rental property manager is Ulysses Up.
Euripides Euripidos.
Our complaint line operator from the Dubai office is Mustafa Wrong Number. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff, and our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the slush-encrusted exchange students in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1407, download classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, let's say you're someone who just can't get enough Car Talk. Okay, let's say you have a long flight coming up, and the alternative is talking to your mother-in-law.
Okay.
Well, you can now get Car Talk on Google Play and Amazon in addition to iTunes. Check out staff favorites, search the archives, or play Angry Birds instead. See if we care. Find links to all of our previous shows over at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR commissioner wonders if we're on performance-decreasing drugs whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR.